Hey, this week on the podcast, a little something different for you. I've partnered with my friends over at Zenfolio.com to answer a series of questions on the show. The first one is a question that we as photographers get all the time, and that's the question of which camera should I buy? I'm going to take a stab at answering that question on this week's episode of This Week in Photo.
This is TWIP.
Okay, spoiler alert. The answer to the question, what camera should I buy, is there is no answer to that question. It depends, right? That's the answer to the question. It depends on a lot of things. And we're going to talk about some of those things in this video. It depends on how much money do you have, right? It depends on what are you shooting? Where are you shooting? What is your commitment to this art form? Are you just playing around, or do you plan on making a go of this as a career? All these things factor in early on in the decision-making process around what camera should you buy. So let's start with the first thing. The first thing that you want to consider when selecting a camera or considering a camera is the genre. What genre of photography are you interested in? Landscape, portraiture, street photography, wedding photography, astrophotography, underwater photography. It goes on and on. There is no one camera that's, maybe there is. I haven't found it yet, but I don't believe there is one camera that is amazing at all genres. It's a genre-based sport that you're getting into. So that's the first question you have to ask yourself. What genre are you shooting? Because that will then dictate a lot of things like sensor size, and should you care about lens size and the weight of the lenses? If you're going to be hiking up mountains, you care about weight. If it's going to be on a tripod, you don't care so much about weight, right? So you got to answer those questions, or that part of the question first, is what am I shooting? What do I care about? And it doesn't have to be one genre, mind you. It doesn't have to be, well, okay, I'm going to shoot portraits, so I have to get everything for portrait. You have to kind of weight it, right? So I know that right now I feel like I'm going to shoot portraits the most, but I may do the occasional street photography. I may shoot a wedding here and there. I may go on a trip and do some travel stuff. I may try my hand at astrophotography, but my real joy is in portrait photography. So that is what you're going to solve for the most part. And that's going to affect your lens selection, your sensor size selection, and all those things, all of the above, all of the things, right? So let's start there. The next question you're going to want to ask is, what do your peers shoot with, right? And this is a question that a lot of beginning photographers consider, right? So do you know people that are into photography? Are you into photography because someone inspired you to get into photography? If so, maybe you want to consider getting a similar system or the same camera system that they have. And the reason being is, A, you have someone that can show you around the camera and show you the little, you know, idiosyncrasies about the user interface and that sort of thing. Also, maybe to borrow a lens or two from, so you don't have to go buy your own lenses. If you have a friend that has a bunch of lenses already and you want to experiment with portraiture and that person already has a portrait lens, borrow that portrait lens and go out. If you like it, go buy your own. So factor that in. Factor in your peer ecosystem into the decision-making process, because it sounds simple, but it can be huge when you're sitting here and you have a shoot that you want to do and you don't have the right glass for it, and you looked either to rent it or buy it and it's out of your budget range, but your friend down the street has that lens and is not using it. You could go borrow it and take it on your trip or take it on your assignment and get stuff done. Okay, so consider that. Point number two is your peer ecosystem. Are your peers shooting with this? And, you know, if they are, you still have to love the camera system. Don't just buy a particular camera system because someone else has it. You still have to, you know, be in love with it. We're going to talk about that a little bit later, falling in love with your camera system. But you gotta have that love for it. And the bonus on top of that is my friend has the glass already. We're good to go. So take that into consideration, your peer ecosystem. Okay, so the next thing to consider when trying to decide on which camera you should buy is weight. right? I talked about that a little bit earlier, and that's the idea of taking into consideration the heft of both the camera body and the lenses that are going to be going on that thing and what you plan to shoot. For example, if you're a portrait photographer, you can shoot off camera, handheld, of course, doing fashion type stuff, or you could be shooting on a tripod. If you're shooting on a tripod or a stand for the majority of the time, then weight is not that much of a factor for you. Also, how's your health? How's your back, right? Are you okay? Do you have a relatively healthy vertebrae back there and you want to keep it that way? If you want to keep it that way, maybe consider a lighter camera. If you're good and it's more about the heft and the weight and the size of the camera doesn't bother you that much, then you have different options available to you. But just know that that is something that a lot of people overlook, is the idea of what camera or the weight of the camera selection that they have. It may not seem heavy when you're in the camera store or when you're holding the camera initially, but I'm going to tell you, when you're huffing that thing through an airport or around rice paddies in Vietnam or up and down steps somewhere, gravity is not your friend when it comes to heavy cameras. So if that doesn't bother you, then skip this, right? But just take that into consideration as you're making the decision on what camera. Weight is really important, especially these days, because it used to be back in the day that the smaller, lighter cameras are essentially the point and shoot cameras. You're never going to get the quality of the larger camera. So if you wanted that pro level quality and bokeh and depth of field and higher resolutions and all that stuff, then you needed a heavy camera and you had to just suck it up. That is no longer the case. So put that on your decision list. Weight. Do I care about weight? And if so, how much can I tolerate? Okay, real quick, in this next section, I want to talk a little bit about sensor sizes. There are lots of sensor sizes that you have at your disposal to choose from when purchasing. Rule of thumb, larger the sensor size, the more expensive it's going to be, although not in all cases. There are exceptions to every single rule. I just want to give you a brief overview of why you might choose one sensor size over another. So let's start. So first, here is a Micro Four Thirds camera. This is the Lumix GH5 Mark II. Micro Four Thirds camera, small, relatively small sensor size. And because of the small sensor size, you're going to have smaller lenses, which equate to lighter lenses, Micro Four Thirds. The next level up from the Micro Four Thirds sensor size is APS-C. APS-C is slightly larger, more data, more pixels, better low light performance, etc. Right? Still smaller lenses. Sometimes APS-C cameras like the Fujifilm X100 series cameras, which are ridiculously amazing cameras, those have beautiful large APS-C size sensors in them, which gives them the ability to go anywhere with a photographer, whether they're doing night street photography or whatever, right? So amazing bodies. On the other end, kind of towards the other end of the spectrum, are your full frame cameras. Like here's one, this is the Lumix S1. So look at that full frame sensor in there. I'm trying to catch the light. Where is it? There it is, right there. So this is a full frame camera. The full frame cameras, heavier, like you can tell, look at that. The heft of the full frame cameras can't be ignored, but also you're gonna get better quality. So shallower depth of field because of the optics of having a larger sensor. You're also going to get more pixels to play with when cropping. You're also going to get more pixels to play with when retouching. Just more data all around. So, but more is not necessarily more. If you've brought your S1 or your large full frame camera on a trip and you leave it in the hotel room because it's too heavy to carry around, when if you had brought a smaller camera, you would have got great shots regardless, and you would have taken the camera with you. So definitely take size into account when you're making the decision on which camera to buy. So one of the next things to consider, of course, and arguably one of the more important things to consider when making a choice on camera, the first camera that you should buy, and that's gonna be lenses. So going back to what I was saying at the beginning of this video, lenses are what make everything work, obviously. The art of photography is recording light, and light gets into that sensor we just talked about through the lens. So the lens arguably is more important. A lot of people will say is more important than the camera body itself. Why do they say that? Why is the glass or the lens more important than the camera body? It's not more important, but it is less transient than the camera body. That's what people intend to say when they say it's all about the glass. Because if you invest in good glass or good lenses for your camera system, they are gonna outlast that body. When the manufacturer comes out with a new version of that camera, the Nikon whatever, or the Lumix whatever, or the Sony whatever, you're gonna take the lens off the old thing and slap it on the new thing. So it's gonna go with you. So it's important, and it is a wise investment to invest in good glass. And there are several good glass manufacturers. One of my favorites is Sigma. Also, the native glass that comes with cameras or that the camera manufacturers produce is typically amazing as well. So then, okay, we've settled that. We know that glass is important. Probably put a little bit more weight on the glass purchase or the glass side of the equation than the camera body. But what lens should I buy? Right? It's back to that again. Okay, I know there's no one right answer for cameras to buy, but what about lenses? What lenses should I start with? And not to be flippant, but it goes back to what I said before. It depends. It depends on that trifecta: budget, what are you going to be shooting, do your friends have it, etc. Right? Generally speaking, though, photographers will tell you that a good all-around walk-around lens is a 50 millimeter equivalent. A lot of photographers call it the Nifty 50. It's a 50 millimeter equivalent lens, which approximates your general field of view as an adult human, right? As you walk around, you're generally looking at things in kind of a 50 millimeter view. So when you put that kind of lens on your camera, it feels more natural when you're walking around. When you see a shot and you bring the camera up, you don't have to worry about it being too far away or too close or anything like that. So it's a general rule of thumb. Most photographers will have a 50 millimeter lens in their bag. Going back a little bit to the sensor size discussion, 50 millimeter is relative to the sensor size on that particular camera body. For example, on a full frame, a 50 millimeter lens basically approximates the normal human field of view. However, on a Micro Four Thirds, it's approximately half, right? So on a Micro Four Thirds camera, a 25-ish millimeter lens, which would be the 50 millimeter lens equivalent, is what you're gonna want on a Micro Four Thirds camera. And the same for your APS-C cameras. So that should be, or the equivalent of that lens should be in your bag all the time. The next thing to think about is, and this is, I think this is a point of some controversy, and I think it's mainly between, you know, photographers that have been shooting for a long time and photographers that haven't been shooting for a long time. I think the people that have been shooting for a long time typically approach the argument around zoom lenses with what I've come to learn is the incorrect assumption that variable focal length lenses, i.e. zoom lenses, are inferior to prime lenses, i.e. fixed focal length lenses. What I mean is, you know what a zoom is, right? So a zoom lens, you can zoom in and zoom out. And a prime lens or a fixed focal length, you can't zoom. It is what it is. If it's a 50 millimeter, it's gonna be a 50 millimeter forever. So the idea is that, well, zooms could never be as sharp as a prime lens because there's so many more lens elements in there. The light has to go through more things to get to the sensor. And the more times it goes through glass, it's gonna diffract more and get softer, and it can no way be as sharp. I've since learned that is incorrect. there are some amazing zoom lenses out there that can do some amazing work that rival many prime lenses. So if you make the decision to only shoot with prime lenses for whatever reasons, don't let one of those reasons be that zoom lenses aren't as sharp as primes, because they are. However, they're more expensive than prime lenses. So in some cases, right? So this is all relative. You got to do your own shopping. And again, it depends on the camera system you're buying and the manufacturer, all that stuff. But all things being equal, if you're buying kind of a regular level prime lens and a regular level zoom lens, one's going to be more expensive. If you're going to buy a really expensive prime lens, I'm going to talk about that in a second, what makes a lens expensive, right? So if you're going to buy a really expensive prime lens versus a not so expensive zoom lens, you're going to notice a clarity difference, of course. So why are some lenses more expensive than other lenses? So we've got the main thing is there's a lot of factors in here. My brain is trying not to get too complex with this, but let's say the main factor is speed when it comes to price of lenses. And when I say speed, I'm talking about the f-stop, or the amount of light that lens can let in at its widest aperture. So the aperture is when you turn the f-stop ring, it closes down. When you're at, say, f16, f22, you got a little circle like that to look through. And then when you open up to f2.8, 1.6, 1.2, it's basically letting in. You're turning on the faucet and opening up the faucet, and all that water can come through. The more light that can come through, the better, because that means the shallower depth of field that you can get. It also means the you can shoot in lower light with that lens. So you're going to be able to get images in scenes that cameras that with less expensive lenses that can't open up as wide, they're not going to be able to make images as good as you could with your expensive lens that can open up wide. So you're going to pay for that, though. So you got to make that toss up. And part of that toss up, remember, this video is about making the decision on which camera you should buy. Part of that toss up is, do you really need to shoot at night? So if you're a photographer and you mainly shoot birds, or you're mainly, everything you shoot is daytime and you very rarely go out at night, or you very rarely shoot in low light situations, it's not necessarily in your best interest to spend extra thousands of dollars on a lens that can shoot in low light, right? If you're never going to use it, unless you need that shallow depth of field for artistic purposes, etc. So keep that in mind. You know, if you're going to be shooting, back to the beginning of this video, what genre are you shooting? Are you mainly going to be on daytime safaris in Africa? Could probably get away with a lower expensive zoom lens for that. Are you going to be doing portraiture that's going to be on billboards and you need to be retouching? You might want to consider full frame with a fast lens that can open up wide. So these are the decisions that you make. Now you're starting to understand what I said in the beginning, that there's no one right answer to all this stuff. All of it depends on a myriad of factors. And all of these factors are directly tied into genre and budget, right? What do you have to spend, and your commitment level to photography? So if this is just a hobby for you and you're just playing around, probably get away with buying cheap glass for now until you figure out you're interested in this. If you know that you're going to be in this to win it, you're going to be a photographer, you're committed, invest in good glass at the beginning and you won't be sorry. One of the other things that you should consider is, do you intend to shoot video or not in your photography? Some people don't care about video, some people do, some people will be transitioning into video. It's something that you should consider when purchasing your camera and the glass for that camera. So just keep that in mind. Most modern mirrorless cameras or DSLRs today will shoot video in varying degrees of quality. If you're a cinematographer or a filmmaker, that's going to affect your decision. You're probably going to want to skew more towards cameras that put video first. Like, for example, back to that Lumix GH5 Mark II. It's designed as a very capable video camera. That's what it does. It also shoots stills, but it's highly capable. You can create a feature film with that thing. Or you could go with something like I'm shooting on right now. This is a Lumix BG1. It's called a box camera, and it has no screen, no LCD or anything on it. It's literally a box with a lens stuck on the front of it, because this is all it does. It does content like this for me, sits behind my computer, I record on it, everybody's happy. If you want kind of the best of both worlds, look for a camera from a manufacturer that you kind of determined that you want to move in that direction, whether it be Nikon, Canon, Sony, Fuji, Panasonic, etc. Look at their camera line and figure out which one in that line is more video capable for you. Down towards the lower end of the line, let's say on the Panasonic side, towards the lower end of the line, usually where the lines are drawn is with resolution, you know, the 1080 or HD resolution, moving up to 4K, moving up to 8K, and those higher resolutions. This camera that I'm shooting on right now, like I said, it's the BG1. It is a Netflix certified camera. So if I had the skill to do a Netflix type documentary, I could do it with this camera. I'm using it for arguably pedestrian purposes, but I like having it. But if I'm out and about, I'm probably going to take my Lumix G9. Or a GH5 like this guy right here. It's light, it's small, I can take it with me, I can shoot still photos, or I can press a button and roll video. So if you care about video, it's something to take into account. It goes back again, you know, you're seeing these recurring themes in this conversation. The size matters and the content or genre matter about what you're going to shoot. And now you also know that if you have an intent or a desire at some point, either now or in the future, to add video into what you're doing, it makes sense to pay attention to that now and get a camera that you can grow into. So you want to have those video capabilities, even if you're not going to use them right now, you want to know that they're there. So one day you should, if you should decide to record some video or launch a YouTube channel or something, you want to be able to use your same camera body and the same lenses and all that stuff to record that other kind of content. All right, now we're going to get a little controversial because we've been talking about these amazing cameras with big sensors, smaller sensors, beautiful glass, zoom, speed, all that stuff, right? It's exciting if you like photography, talking about these sleek, amazing kind of high-tech camera bodies, it's just exciting to talk about these. But, you know, there's another one. There's another camera in the mix that you should absolutely consider when you're looking at what photography or what camera or what genre are you going to dive into, and that's these guys, right? So this is an iPhone. Why not just use an iPhone for your photography? So I want to come at this with from a slightly different perspective, right? So I don't believe in the... or I believe less in the idea of either or, right? I don't think that you have to make the choice, even with sensor sizes. Why do you have to say, I only shoot with full frame? Can't you shoot with Micro Four Thirds or APS-C when it fits the situation that you're confronted with, or shoot with full frame if you need that level of flexibility in the final image? Why not do that? And to that, sometimes this is great. This is typically with you all the time, and it is a full-fledged computer with a screen, input, output, and connectivity, the whole nine yards. It's right there, and the apps on the iPhone are kind of ridiculous, kind of amazing, the kind of things that you can do in the palm of your hand while sitting in line, you know, at Disneyland. You could have shot something, edited it to perfection, and shared it out to thousands of people before you make it to the front of the line. So on that tip, the phones and the sensor and the computational photography that's inherent inside of modern mobile phones is amazing, and you can do a lot of crazy good work with just a phone, including video work and animation and all kinds of stuff. So if you're a new photographer and you're just kind of getting your feet wet and you're like, oh, I gotta get out there, I gotta save up and buy all this stuff, you might consider sharpening your photography skills on the composition, exposure, and storytelling angles before investing in a ton of gear, because you already have a highly capable camera. So you can get going. You don't have to wait. You can get going with a mobile phone and rock and roll, and then transition into, quote, a proper camera if necessary down the line. So keep that in mind. The mobile phones are amazing these days. You can do a ton of work on just your cell phone. And the mobile post-processing apps that are out there are amazing. There's some things that you can do on the phone that it's hard to do on a regular computer. You can get a ton of stuff done just with the phone. And just to put another and on top of it, when you finally get, if you didn't have your proper camera yet, when you finally get it, most of these modern cameras, mirrorless in particular, have apps that you can install in your Android or your iPhone and connect the two together. So you can see what the camera sees through your phone, put your camera on a tripod and trigger it with the phone and see what the phone sees. Or just if you're out and about, plop down at a coffee shop, offload your favorite images from the camera to the phone, do some minor editing and post directly from there. So I think the phone is currently an integral part of a lot of photographers' kit as we move forward, but it may become more and more important. I think there is no may. I think it will become more and more important with each successive release of both Android and iPhone devices. The image quality gets better and better and better. And they're doing things that are currently not possible on traditional mirrorless or DSLRs, i.e. from the point of capture, applying a series of algorithms or computational photography to various parts of that scene before it's even recorded to the memory card inside the phone. So there's a ton of stuff that you can do. Hopefully those things will make it over to traditional phones or traditional cameras at some point where computational photography is inside there and we can maybe install apps, but that's a rant for a different video. Suffice it to say, for this segment of this video, don't discount your phone as a viable capture device. I think the phones today are amazing and you can do a ton of stuff with them. And of course, that connectivity with modern DSLRs and modern mirrorless cameras can't be overlooked while you're in the field, being able to shoot and offload directly into the device. And one more thing is on a camera like this, this is a GH5 Mark II, and I know a lot of other camera manufacturers do the same thing. You can now tether directly from your phone to the camera and shoot and stream live. So you could be recording YouTube video and streaming live to YouTube or Facebook or wherever directly from the camera using only the mobile phone in your front pocket. So a lot of flexibility for storytellers and image makers. If you've already got a phone in your pocket, don't discount it as a very viable and necessary part of your overall kit. So as we wrap this up, I just want to bring it home and talk about the, I would argue, for most of us, one of the most important things to consider when looking at the camera that you're going to purchase is budget, right? If money is no option, then the physics and the math around our selection choices is different than when money is an object. Unfortunately, for most of us on this planet in particular, money is an object and we have to make decisions and sometimes unfortunate decisions around what we're going to buy based on what our budget will bear. So I'm going to talk about that formula a little bit just to bring it all home. So I look at it as kind of a trifecta or a tripod, if you will, of decision making. The first piece on that tripod is genre. So, and this is a tripod that's helping us determine what kind of camera, what I can afford, right? So the first thing is genre. What, you know, what am I going to be shooting? That, you know, unless you know exactly, and not even exactly, but unless you have an idea of what you want to shoot, the rest of the formula is hard to kind of figure. So you got to kind of know what you're going to shoot in order to figure out the rest of this. The first piece of that, the puzzle there, so it's genre, of course, what are you gonna shoot, but how much money do you have, right? That is really the first part of this little flowchart we're building, is how much money do you have to dedicate to purchasing this camera and lens combination? That seems obvious, but that's going to dictate everything else below it. So if I've got $2,000 or $3,000 or $500, what I can get is going to be dictated by that, but I can still use the logic of what we've been talking about in this video about what's going to happen down the line. What's where you are right now is not where you're going to be in 2 years, but you want your past self to be looking out for your future self. In other words, if you know that you're going to be getting into a certain genre of photography and you only have $1,000 to spend, should you weight that $1,000 towards the camera body or the lens, right? I think you know the answer to that as we work through this. So keep all that in mind as you work through it. And then the third leg of that decision-making tripod, we've got budget, we've got genre. The third leg would be peers, your peer relationship. If you got friends, if you're lucky enough to have friends that have the same gear that you have, then that makes things a lot easier. You can borrow lenses and trade lenses back and forth. Before you buy, you can sit down and ask a gazillion questions about the gear, you know, and that person can tell you, yeah, don't buy that lens, I had problems with it, or buy this lens, or don't do this, or use that, or this is how you find the intervalometer in the menuing system. You can't discount that. And sure, you can find most of these answers on YouTube or online or something, but having a friend or a human to bounce ideas off of is invaluable. So keep that in mind. I want to keep this part of the video relatively short because it's completely subjective, right? Everyone has different budgetary constraints. Some don't have budgetary constraints, but it's important to answer these questions as you kind of work through the decision-making process of what camera should I buy? Again, how much money you got? Do your friends have the gear that you're considering? And third, what are you going to be shooting? And that what is going to dictate, wow, okay, I need to buy long lenses, which are expensive. Long lenses meaning telephoto lenses, right? So I need to buy long lenses, so most of the money should go to that. Or I'm going to be doing astrophotography, so I need to make sure that maybe my money goes into a heavier tripod because I'm tracking stars. So those sorts of things are the questions that you should definitely have in the back of your mind. But it all boils down to budget and looking at it from the standpoint of now is not where you're going to be in a year from now or 2 years from now. This is your starting point, and it's not a finite end-all be-all point in time. All right, that's it for this very first video. This one was all about how to pick the perfect camera. This video series that I'm putting together in coordination with the folks over at zenfolio.com, this whole series is about how to launch your photo business. And we figured picking the camera was probably the first thing to cover. And I wanted to cover it kind of exhaustively and talk about it. So that's what we did here. I hope you stay tuned for future videos in this series. The next one, it's going to be all about building the perfect website for your photography business. I hope you'll tune in for that one, and I hope to see you soon. Take care.
This is Twit.